Your life is precious. This is it. You've got one shot at this. But is there a sense on the inside that you're capable of so much more? If so, the Missing Secret podcast is for you. The book Think and Grow Rich has been read by over 150 million people. It's the top book in the world on success by a factor of 10. In the book, it says there's a secret for success, but the author only gives us half the secret.
When I turned 50, I figured out the full secret, the missing secret, and developed a 12-minute-a-day technique to apply it. And it caused my income to go up by 25 times over the $200,000 to $300,000 a year I was making in the prior 20 years. I felt so blessed.
When John taught me the missing secret, it changed my life, doubling my income and dramatically impacting my health, relationships, and quality of life.
Today, most people are just winging life. They don't have anything pulling them forward to their desired life.
Leverage yourself through science. It takes 12 minutes a day. Watch what happens.
Welcome to the Missing Secret Podcast. I'm Kelly Hatfield.
Hey, and I'm John Mitchell. So today our topic is creating a nest egg so you can retire. So, Kelly, why don't you share with our audience sort of your approach to saving money and creating that nest egg? Well, what has been your approach since you were young?
Yeah, I was very lucky because my dad, this is something that was instilled in me from an early age, like as early as when I was getting allowance. Like I was taught this, that you always pay yourself first. You know, and back in the day, I had just a little savings account that, you know, I would put it into. And then obviously, as I've become, you know, more sophisticated in how I utilize my money and invest money, you know, that's changed. But that the one thing is never changed, which that's the first thing that happens is I always pay myself. And now I've automated that, you know, so that it's automatically going into the accounts that I want it to go into. But, you know, that's been my, you know, method from as early as I could start earning money.
So did you take the approach that you're going to put away, say, 10% a year? Is that, were you that precise or how'd you do it?
Yeah, it literally was. And that's changed and evolved over the year. But when my dad, you know, taught it to me, he was like, you pay yourself 20%. Mm-hmm. So you take 20% off the top. And that's evolved. You know, I'm more of like 15, you know, 10 to 15%. But when I was, you know, younger and earlier, you know, it was 20%. But like I never even saw it. So I never missed it because I was taking 20% of what I earned and moving it over into a savings account.
Right. Well, you know, that is a smart way to do it. You know, I regret to say that I wasn't as diligent about saving money as I was an entrepreneur. You know, when I became an entrepreneur at 30, throughout my 30s and 40s, candidly, I always thought I was going to hit it big and that would provide for my nest egg. And that is not an enlightened approach to it. I should have been doing what you did, which is, you know, saving 10 to 20% a year. And, you know, there's a great book called The Richest Man in Babylon. And
that's
it really, you read it up.
Yeah, that was the one that I was introduced to when I was, I think I was like 10 years old. My dad brought that into my existence. That's a book with basic principles. But yeah, I love that that's the book you mentioned.
Right. Yeah, it's powerful. And so, you know, for our audience, I think the lesson is you got to embrace saving and embrace the compounding effect. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to share with our audience is when you have money, how should you invest it? And I'll tell you this, the journey that I went on. So when I sold my reverse mortgage company, I got a lot of money. And you know, I, being a CPA, you would think I would be pretty prudent about it and pretty well versed on it, but I never really had big money before then. So I wasn't all that sophisticated with it. And so I get a big chunk of money. And the idea was, you know, if I could earn, say, 5% a year on my nest egg, that would pay my living expenses, you know? And so that was the theory. And it seemed to make sense. 5% was not an unusual return to anticipate. You would legitimately think you could get 5% on your money. And so I start with a financial advisor. And this is typical of financial advisors. They're like, well, the market is defined by the S&P 500, you know, and so you're always comparing your performance or the investment advisor's performance against the S&P 500. Now, what is a reality, though, is that most financial planners and investors never do as good as the S&P because, you know, the idea is that the S&P 500 can have, over time, big dips, like a 30-35% dip. We saw that happen in 2008 was really the last time we saw a big dip. I guess during COVID, we saw a big dip. And those dips happen more or less every 10 years. But here's the fallacy that I have come to appreciate is they'll say, well, okay, we're going to do a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds, and you're not going to be risking losing 30%. As I got this money, you know, like 10 years ago or so, I saw that at first, you know, I would get, I don't know, an overall return of 3 or 4% for, oh, I don't know, 2 or 3 years when the market went up, say, 15%. And, you know, again, the advisor would always go, well, yeah, you made 4% and the market did 15, but you weren't exposed to losing 30%. And after doing that for 2 or 3 years, I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm taking that 30% cut after just in the opportunity cost I'm losing after 3 years. If my returns are always 10% lower over 3 years, then there's the 30% that I'm afraid of incurring. And so the lesson, I think, is it's best just put your money in the S&P 500. That's what Warren Buffett says. And the logic of this is that the United States is the most innovative, productive country in the world. And the idea, if you're always investing in the S&P 500, you don't really have to pick the stocks. You just know that over time, it's going to outperform anything and everything, basically. And so I so wish somebody had explained that to me 10 years ago, that again, do what the top investor in the world, Warren Buffett, says to do. You know, he tells his own kids when he dies, don't put it in Berkshire Hathaway stock, put it in the S&P 500. And that is the lesson I've learned. My good friend Bill Cunningham, who is the chancellor, former chancellor and president at the University of Texas, who's worth many, many, many millions. That's the lesson he's learned. And that's essentially the path I have taken over the last few years, is just to, you know, do that and not incur the fees, the big fees that the money managers pay you. And like last year, the S&P 500 went up 26.3%, which is pretty damn good. So I don't know. You think that's helpful to people?
I think it's helpful to people. Obviously, we're not financial advisors, so I'm going to preface by saying that any advice we give you, you're taking at your own.
And now you're going to sue us. Let me give you Kelly's email address.
No. But I will say I agree with you because I have invested in the S&P and specifically in index funds. But the one thing that my dad taught me early on that got me like excited, you know, about investing and how I first started to invest was that I wanted to have a piece of a company. So anything I loved, so like if I wore Nike shoes, it was like, I want to be part owner in that business. And
yeah.
So I looked at it as like, I want to be a shareholder and be part of that, you know? And so the things that I use all of the time, like Amazon and, you know, Apple and anything that I loved as a product myself, he's like, invest in it, become part owner. And so I would buy some shares, you know, and so it was a whole mentality around, you know, that was taught to me around, you know, that piece and what kind of ignited my excitement about investing and looking at it kind of through that lens. And I've done really well as a result of that. If it's something that I'm like, oh, that's a really cool idea, I love this product, or I love,
right,
I love, of course, my dogs. And so, you know, I'm looking at different products like Chewy, you know, .com. And, you know, right, those companies that I utilize on a regular basis, I will buy shares in, just because that's worked out well for me. And it's just been a fun part of investing and has made it fun.
Right. That makes sense. Well, you know, I was just talking to Bill Cunningham about this last week. I was telling him, I said, you know, if you look at the S&P 500, it went up a great deal this past year because NVIDIA was the biggest company, and it like doubled or tripled in value. And you know, I was thinking, well, how are you ever going to pick the next NVIDIA? Well, you never will. But you know, if you invest in the S&P 500, you end up not having to pick the next NVIDIA, but you'll own it because it'll rise to the top. And that's another reason that, you know, just investing in the S&P 500 makes sense.
Yep.
And you know, a couple of other lessons that I would suggest in regarding money is never loan money. Never loan money. I don't know, Kelly, if you've experienced this, but Jinj and I have. You know, when we've loaned money, inevitably they don't pay it back, and we're the bad guy for asking it to be paid back. And I'll tell you, my attitude is we're just not loaning money. We just don't do it. We're not a bank. We hate that you're having a hard time, but you know, we've been burned too many times, and we see that if you just embrace that hard and fast rule that I don't loan money, people accept it. They may not like it. That's been a good one. Do you agree with that one?
I agree with that one. And I'll just put one little caveat. Like, I don't loan money. I will never loan money with the expectation like that I'm going to get anything back. So right. If I can give somebody money for something, like somebody's got a problem and I decide I want to help them out, that is what I'm doing. I'm helping
right.
out, and I have no expectation of being paid back.
That's,
you know what I mean? Otherwise, no, I don't loan and say, okay, like, you're going to owe me this back and put a, nope. If I'm going to give them the money, I give it with zero expectation of getting the money back.
Right. You know, the other thing I would say is never do private investments. Bill and I were talking about this. If we had never invested in deals where people came to us, private people, and said, boy, I've got this idea, put money in it. We've all done it. And if we just had many years ago said, no, not doing it, I'm only investing in publicly traded stocks, and in particular the S&P 500, we would have been better off to do that than to never do a private investment, you know, where somebody, maybe they're doing a limited partnership or that type of thing. So that's another lesson that I wish the younger John Mitchell had learned at an earlier age. So, you know, to sort of turn the page, I got another topic I'd like to sort of talk about that I've been thinking about this weekend. So I was actually talking to one of our listeners over the weekend, and she's about 48 years old, and she's sort of been an entrepreneur. She's sort of now going away from it, trying to figure out what she's doing. And, you know, one of the things I thought about in terms of, you know, being successful in life and maybe in particularly in the career side is you've got to create clarity. And obviously our methodology is all about creating clarity, you know, exactly the person you want to be, exactly what you want to accomplish, and precisely how you're going to achieve your clearly defined goals. So this methodology is all about creating immense clarity. And I've come to realize that I think that the average person probably lives their life with about, and I'm spitballing this, but I'd say about 40% clarity. They sort of know the person they want to be, but, you know, they've never really fleshed it out in detail. with their health, they're probably above 50%. They know what they need to do. You know, so in that area, they're a little above 50%. But then in their business, I think that they're under 50%. You know, they're not completely clear about what their strategy for success is or what moves the needle. They probably can't succinctly articulate their business plan. But I'm curious from your standpoint, do you buy that people probably have about 40% clarity about their life as a general rule?
Yeah, I would think so. And I might even think, I don't know, in today's, maybe that number was 5 or 10 years ago, but I wonder whether even in today's day and age, it's even less than 40%, only because of how much our attention is stolen, or how much of our attention we give to things outside ourselves with just, you know, the developments of technology, social media, you know, how we consume news, all of those things. I wonder if we're even more disconnected with ourselves and therefore have even less clarity than that.
Yeah, it would not surprise me. But that's interesting that you see that it's probably about 40%, but it could be less. And, you know, as I was talking to our listener, I was thinking about this whole idea about, you know, creating a nest egg. And again, she's 48, so I can so relate to what's going on with her. I see that in creating wealth, the first thing you got to do is figure out what your unique talent is. Understand what that is. I see how powerful it is. Like mine is, I take the complex and make it simple. And I saw how that played out throughout my life. And I discovered it when I was like 28 years old as a CPA. So that's sort of the first thing is, what's your unique talent? And then you got to figure out your why. What, you know, we were talking about this the other episode about your personal mission statement and your why. Like my why is that I feel life is so precious, and God, for whatever reason, gave me the ability to figure out the full secret of the top book in the world on success, and to honor the great life I have, and to play the precious gift of life to my full potential. I need to share this with the world to the best of my ability. Well, you know, that drives me. It's emotional, you know? And so that's the second thing is, you got to understand your why. But you get those two things in terms of clarity, you're well on your way to figuring out how to create that nest egg. You buy that?
Yep, I do. And one tip I have for people, because this is hard sometimes, and this is that clarity piece where if you're having trouble figuring out what that one thing is about yourself, you know, your superpower or whatever,
right,
ask the people who are closest to you that you trust. Hey, you know, if you were to describe, you know, what you think my superpower is, or what would you say? Most people, like your closest friends, that kind of thing, will right out of the gate be able to tell you, you know, you'll start to see trends and information shared, you know, but again, it has to be people, you know, that you trust and, you know, that you feel safe asking that question of and everything. But if you need some direction to kind of start to spur those juices a little bit, because again, most of us are not thinking at a very deep level. And so need a little bit of help that oftentimes can spur that exercise and help you go, oh, you know what? They're right. That is, you know, and I would go even one step further and say this. Like, so again, it can help prompt some of that if you're having if you're being challenged by not having a lot of clarity around, you know, what you're really good at, what you're intrinsically good at, what that superpower is.
Now, I know you have many superpowers, but if you had to nail it down to like the top one, what would you say?
I think it would be my communication skills and the ability to make people feel seen and heard.
Right. Yeah, I'd agree with that. And share with everybody your why, basically.
I think that my why stems back to, I'm very, very grateful and lucky, you know, to have had a couple of key people in my life that saw me and heard me And I don't know if I had not had those two people in my life early on in my formative years, how I would have turned out if I had not had those people in my life. And I understand just from the feeling of either feeling special or feeling seen and heard and what that can do in a young person's life, or in any person's life. That's all anybody really wants, is to feel seen or heard or understood. And so I think at an early age, and just as I've grown and interacted with so many people in my business and as team, you know, with hiring, and I've recognized that, oh my gosh, you know, there are a lot of people out there that feel invisible. And if I can be that one person where people walk away and are like, man, I feel better just having had a conversation with her.
Right.
And it's only because they feel like they were heard and seen or understood, then I feel like I'm fulfilling my purpose.
Right.
And just that one thing, that if just that one person is like, oh, I feel so much better, then I did my job and what I was put here to do.
Right, right. You know, I tell you, I had an interesting experience last week with my class. We were talking about this and figuring out their why and doing their personal mission statement. And it made me think about my why. And some of our audience has heard the story about, you know, my mom, when I was turning 50, she was dying of pancreatic cancer. And every day after work, I'd go see her and I'd end up crying my eyes out. And I ultimately, you know, and this goes on like for every night for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, and it's 45 minutes a night, and it's gut-wrenching. And I felt like I was letting my mom down with my life, because they had given me all the advantages. And so that was a big part of the why. But the other sort of why component, and I don't know if I ever told you this, I may have, but, you know, I lost my best friend at 40. Did I tell you about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and of course, I found him after he had died, and I'm holding him in my arms. And, you know, I went to high school with him, and he was my best friend, and how devastating that was to see, you know, life leave him. And, you know, we'd grown up together, and it made me appreciate how precious life is. And so, you know, getting at your why is so important. And one of the things that I think you'll see, we're going to do this with my class, is once you create your personal mission statement, that 100 word statement that is the why behind your life, then you take it and put it in ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT to make it more emotional. And it'll blow you away by what it does. And now this is sort of standard procedure in our methodology, in the AI algorithm, when it comes down to, you know, asking people to create their mission statement. They create it, and then they're instructed now to give it to ChatGPT and make it more emotional, and it'll blow you away what you get. It's just really cool.
That's awesome. I love that, and helping get more emotional. Because again, if you are not tapped into yourself and this is new to you of thinking this deeply about your life, I think that's kind of sometimes too what scares people away from sitting and doing
right.
This is because finding the words or finding a way to express the way you're feeling or identifying so having some of these tools to help you do that is so cool. You know, even if it just ignites sparks and ignites something in you that helps send you, you know, helps give you the words or the, you know, feeling perhaps that you're feeling helps you identify that. I think that that's awesome.
Right. You know, you gave me that Dean Graziosi YouTube video where he goes, seven levels deep on asking them why.
Yeah.
And I showed that to my class, the whole video. You know, it took 15 minutes, but it was so worth it because, you know, all of them were coming up with whys that were in their head, not in their heart, because that's the process. That's normal. But, you know, I think now it's interesting in the academic environment. A year or two ago, everybody was afraid of ChatGPT because the perception was students would use it to cheat on exams. And now the push is to make them use ChatGPT any chance we get, because I see personally that it's literally an extension of my own brain. And, you know, there's a ChatGPT version that can do it all audio. You just say it, it repeats it back. I don't know. Do you use that version?
Nope, I haven't used that version. I just enter all of my prompts in, you know, and I'm taking a couple of classes in AI stuff with understanding, you know, just how specific and intricate you can get with prompts. And it's amazing how it can help. So, yeah.
Well, that's all I have today. And unless you have anything else, I guess we'll see him next time. What do you think?
Sounds good. Yep, let's do it. We'll see you next time.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Missing Secret Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about this 12-minute-a-day technique that gives you control over your life beyond what you've ever experienced before, visit themissingsecret.org. That's themissingsecret.org. Sign up for a free video that reveals the full secret of Think and Grow Rich and purchase John's book, The Missing Secret. Until next time, be the exception. Work smarter, not harder, by leveraging yourself through science. It takes 12 minutes a day.